We'll play the OG intro song. Hello, everyone, and welcome back to another episode of Gen X Lounge, where we discuss the pop culture of today and look back at the pop culture of yesterday, but mostly we just shoot the shit. And on today's episode, we're going to discuss the recent death of a legend. A legend in the world of murdering. With me, welcome back, Dutch.
Yo,
what's grand up? Intro.
And then, of course, once again, Bolo.
The sax, that's, baby.
That's going to make me laugh every time.
I know, every time I play it. Like, and that, of course, is the Mighty Quinn. You'll not see nothing like the
Mighty Quinn. How's it going, people?
Yes, sir.
Good, good. How's everybody doing? Everybody good? Everybody happy?
Could have been a lot better after that fucking game last night.
That we were talking about it a little bit before you jumped on. And I was like, dude, I purposely scheduled the recording to be tonight because I really wanted to watch that game last night. And like anything would have been better than watching that game last night.
It was so frustrating, man. Like it looked like it was coming down to like, it was like a real thriller. Like it was like everything that you'd want. Like a game like the playoff game like that to be, but then it's like Maxie should there should have been a foul called at the end when Maxie went to the ground, but he should have secured the ball. And Nick Nurse, when he was trying to call his timeouts, like why was he not just on the court like timeout?
They were talking about that today on 97.5 that like Sapolstra, you see when he calls a timeout, he runs onto the court, and they were like maybe that's what you know. He needs to do. I don't know. We're talking about the Sixers, Knicks game, by the way. I am forever and will always be convinced that the NBA is not outright rigged, but by far the refs are told to sway games.
James Dolan going up there just putting a couple hot nose in each ref's pocket.
Well, I just think with the Knicks, like they've that's what the second biggest market in the country, right? And they've been bad for so long that I think the NBA would love the Knicks to go to the at least to the Eastern Conference Finals and play Boston, which is probably their dream matchup in that. So the referees don't like outright I mean the game's still played, right? Like the game is played, the players make plays. But I think the refs can definitely in the NBA and do definitely like call the game a certain way to try to sway it to have a certain outcome. If you ever watch that Netflix documentary that came out, it's like about the whole big, it was the guy, Tim Donaghy, the guy that was around here. I mean, dude, when they talk about it, they're like, it was so far deeper than him. Like it was like all the refs would sway games. You know what I mean? Not necessarily that they were betting on games and stuff like he was, but the refs all sway games, and it comes down from the top. It'll be like they specifically mentioned Allen Iverson, and he would do this move, and they said it came down from the top that they were like, yo, we want you to start looking at this and start calling it. Like, just, you know, so.
Start calling the travel when he palmed the ball?
Yeah.
Did you see AI's statue?
Yeah. People were like mad about it, but like – it's supposed to be a small statue. What is this, a statue for ants? It was supposed to be a small statue, though.
Because I was going
to
say, and it's at the practice facility.
It's at the practice, which is the ultimate irony there, is that it's at the practice facility.
Not a game.
Not a game.
It's not at the game facility. It's at the practice facility.
What made me so mad about last night is I felt the Sixers earned that win. And it got taken away from them. I don't like to blame refs. I mean, the Knicks played well, but I thought the Sixers played great at times. And the way they came back and went ahead right at the end.
Yeah.
I agree.
Was really satisfying. And then it just got taken from them.
And I mean, and Embiid is like, I mean, he's really putting up a gutsy performance because in game one, man, when he came down on that knee and then they showed, they went right into his face and he's just like, I was like, this is it. Like, I was like, he had to have blown his freaking knee up right there. And then he's back out on the court and I'm like, how? What the hell? But I mean, you can tell he's nowhere close to being 100%. He wasn't before he re-injured it. So,
well, what a way to go out if he did go out at that point.
What a dumb thing to do. All right, well, Dutch, you weren't on the last episode, so what's new with you, man?
Not a whole lot. Just like I said, recently finished. I was doing some sound post-production work for a friend of mine's short film that I did a score for and stuff, and just helping him tighten that up before that goes to like Tubi or wherever it's gonna end up. Started because, you know, my shoulder rehab is coming along, so I really started like upping my exercise routine and like, you know, having spent, you know, as many months on the shelf as I did, my body's like, dude, you're really pushing your luck, but there's no way. I'm going to do that 5K this year that I almost did last year before I broke my shoulder.
You can do it.
I totally plan on it, my friend. So, you know, just other than that, you know, looking forward to the summer, hopefully get a few projects going off the ground, and you know, as they say, just chilling.
There you go. Now you're the other Godzilla guy on this show.
Why are you doing this?
and you weren't with us.
Why are you doing this? Last
episode. So just real quick, like you can do 30 seconds, 30 all seconds, right. 45 seconds, you know, 30 minutes.
Well, I will say,
whatever's in your heart.
I saw the movie. I saw the movie down in Florida. With a friend, and it was positively the worst theater experience I've ever had in my life. I mean, it was bad, man. Dude. It was just people not shutting up, just talking, yapping, and like in a way, like it that happens quite a bit, no matter where you're at. But like that, I was like, I've never been in a place this bad. So it already like, it's. I don't want to say I didn't give a shit about the film, but like I didn't really have like. Big anticipation for it, but if it was like Godzilla minus one, I would have been like, I would have just went Savage Hulk, but like I was more or less just like kind of pissed off and annoyed because I was like, you know, I still want to sit and watch the friggin' movie and try and figure out what's going on here. It is what it is. It's not my cup of tea when it gets like into the sillier realm of things. I do still love this version of King Kong a lot. I think that, and to be honest, like Suko, the baby gorilla, came off a lot better than I thought it was going to. What else? Yeah. Kaylee Hoddle's great as Gia again, although like just the whole retconning of like the Infant Islanders and the Skull Islanders sort of being like the same. I didn't actually mind that because I thought, okay, that's kind of a cool way of kind of condensing the universe and still being able to tap into to the mythos of each one. But then it's just like the prophecy was Mothra has to be awakened, and I'm just like, but Mothra was alive like 5 years ago. Did we forget about that? Like, so yeah, I don't know. It seemed like some of it was like not really following its own continuity. I actually liked Godzilla Evolved more than I thought I would. Just cause like slimming him down kind of makes his head woke. a little bit more. Dude, if you wait, come on, Wokezilla is the shit, man. You know what I love about, you know what I actually really like about those fins, regardless of whether they're lit up or not? I always love it. I prefer when Godzilla has fins that are a distinct color from the rest of the body. That's like one major complaint I had with like the legendary and like the minus one Godzilla was just it's all just one. I like when there's a little bit of variation there. So
and they all just kind
of
blend together. Yeah.
Yeah. I was happy that they brought that back. And like I said, Godzilla being slimmer, his head doesn't look like a pea anymore. It's like he actually looks a little bit more proportionate. So I didn't mind all that, you know?
I thought it was fine. I mean, I think the general consensus was that it was completely and utterly ridiculous. It was fine.
Yeah, it served its purpose and stuff. But like I said, the performances, like Rebecca Hall, I love her, like in everything she's in. She's a great actress. If you've never seen a movie called, I think it was the Night House. She was great in that. Good movie. Really good. Yeah, psychological horror movie. And you know, it's a MonsterVerse movie. They're leaning heavily into the goofier side of things. If that's your cup of tea, that's fine. You don't have to constantly post the Godzilla versus Megalon tail slide to justify it. Just say you like silly shit, and it's okay. Yeah. I like silly shit too sometimes, but it's not like I didn't hate it. I found something to enjoy in every one of the MonsterVerse films, even if some of them I liked more than others. Like, I mean, I still prefer Godzilla versus Kong to this movie.
Yeah, I do too.
But you know, it's like I do kind of enjoy watching people like try to. Like downplay it, like because like the movie probably won't make $1 billion, but it's by all accounts a successful film. And it's like if the MonsterVerse continues, and it's still not one's cup of tea or it's kind of your cup of tea, all that's gonna do is just drive the appetite for more of like stuff like Godzilla Minus One and you know good releases of the classic films. So I mean it's a win-win. And if you're not into the movies, you know just don't worry about it.
Yeah. See, look at that. You didn't want to talk about it. You talked the talk.
Yep.
I do want to say the Mothra thing that you brought up. I found this out after we recorded the last episode. That was all ADR'd in after the fact because that was originally going to be a different monster. Did you hear that?
Well, yeah. Because they had said that it was going to be this monster called Phosphora, which is basically Mothra. But now Adam Wingard has actually said that narrative. I mean, and. Choose if you want to believe him or not. I have no reason to think that they would lie about this. Like, there's no reason to lie about it. He said that, like, the intention was always Mothra. And Phosphora was, I guess, always meant to be just, like, a placeholder. And in the event that Mothra couldn't be secured, maybe they were their backup plan. But he said his intention was Mothra from the start. And I'm inclined to believe what he's saying because... That the other the placeholder character was basically was Mothra. There's not
Bolo.
Yes, sir.
Since we last recorded, you've seen the remake of Roadhouse.
Yes, I did.
You didn't get to participate in that discussion last time. So what do you think? How many Van Helsings out of 10 did you give Roadhouse?
I'm literally going to give I'm going to give this movie 3 Van Helsings out of 10. I'm giving it 3.
3 Van Helsings out of 10.
How many Van Helsings out of 10 did you give Van Helsing? It better not be more than 3.
Well, hold up. So let's go with the 5 scale. 3 Van Helsings out of 5.
Oh my god, Chris.
Oh my god.
Let's
did our discussion influence you, Chris Jones?
Can we ruin it for you?
No. Here's the thing. I enjoyed what the attempted to do with this movie. You know what I mean? It was. It's hard to get past or get over Patrick Swayze. That formula, those characters, all that worked, all that was fleshed out. This movie, everything seemed kind of forced. The romance forced. Jake Gyllenhaal. There was 2 other bouncers, and he literally did not care if they lived or died.
Yeah, that's what we were talking about. He didn't give a shit about him at all.
No, there was nothing.
I don't hate that.
Yeah,
it was kind of funny. The look on his face as the other one's getting the shit kicked out of him. He's just like, yeah, whatever.
Yeah, okay. You know what I mean?
It's Monday.
Yeah. And there was some weird fight, like choreography, camera angles that were even like when he got hit by the car, like the the hit and run on the bridge thing.
I felt like some of it was CGI, like augmented or something.
Yeah, it was. There were some weird camera angles that bothered me a little bit too. Conor McGregor is honestly a treat in this movie. Because
a treat.
He's a treat.
Conor McGregor is a treat.
That is like the first. I was gonna say that would be the first time I think anybody's ever said that.
He's a treat because he is the epitome of, hey, I'm a guy in a movie for the first time, and wow, look at me.
Watch me chew the scenery.
You know, as soon as I saw him on screen and he's all buff and everything, I said, Chris Jones is going to freaking love this guy. That was my first thought.
And here,
it's like, he is going to love this guy.
Here's what's great about Conor McGregor. He's known to be a smaller fighter. And I've watched a lot of his fights. I followed his fight career. And to see him this size, it was just like,
yeah, he's big.
What the fuck did he take?
He's really big.
What was he like? Did he eat everything under the sun and say, hey, I'm going to take some TRT plus some roids? Because he looks big and uncomfortable. It's almost like the Jack Reacher thing. Like Jack Reacher from season one to season two is a whole nother human being. You know what I mean? His face. And just to get on Reacher for a second, his face looks like it's going to explode in some scenes because he looks like he's uncomfortable. You know what I mean?
Every time he runs, it's high comedy.
Yeah.
And I hope they do a season three of that show.
You know they're going to.
Yeah. Conor McGregor is, again, I'm so used to seeing him not that size. It was jarring. I was like, holy shit, he's gained probably 30 pounds of muscle. But it's in proportion with his size. It worked.
So, Chris Jones, let me ask you something, and this is something that you and I have talked about. We always struggle with. Are you saying it's a bad movie and you hated it, or are you saying it's a bad movie and you loved it?
It's a bad movie and I loved it.
See, there we go. Chris Jones, like famously, we'll talk about Batman versus Superman, and he's like, I'll give it a 1 out of 10. I love this movie. And I'm like, what?
Here's the thing. There's elements of the movie that are done very, like, Zack Snyder is a visual director. He's not a good storyteller. So the visuals in his films, he nails. The action sequence, he nails. But whoever wrote that, like those characters deserve a better script, period.
Yeah.
But
and yet,
Batman fight scene,
you love that movie. Phenomenal. With all your heart.
I love elements of that movie, yes. Unequivocally. I'll go to my grave saying it.
So, Quinn, how about you? What have you been up to?
You know, I just watched. I watched the preview for the show, and I didn't think I would enjoy it. But I just watched the first episode of Fallout
on my list.
You know, on Amazon
last night too. Yes.
Yeah, and a really, really strong opening that kind of hooks you in, like the. The first episode kind of gets derailed because it has a really, really strong opening and then it shifts to a different character perspective that kind of drags on. Yes. But the opening is strong enough that I will keep watching. Cool. It's a lot of world building, but it's interesting. They do a good job. It's a weird tone. It's almost comedic, not over the top as much as Borderlands, but still over the top. It's violent. But it's also interesting. And what's the guy's name that from Justified and Righteous Gemstones? Goggins?
Walter
Goggins. He's not in it a ton in the opening episode, but the scenes that he is in are pretty great.
Yeah, agreed.
So
I watched.
And then you're watching Shogun, right?
Yeah, we're watching Shogun. We got one more to go, and actually. The finale is tonight, so I will probably actually watch that tomorrow. But man, that last episode—you know—we plug it every week. But if, Yeah, if people are not watching that show, oh man, they are missing out. What a great show!
It's phenomenal. A
seriously good show. Very good.
Have you started that, Dutch?
I've not started Shogun yet, but I have been watching X-Men 97, except I haven't watched the last two episodes of X-Men 97. So I got to get caught up on that.
Yeah, I've only watched the first episode of that.
We talked a little bit about that before. I watched the pilot episode, the first episode of X-Men 97, and I'm like, yeah, I get it. I get what this is about. I don't need to watch this series, but I get it from a nostalgia perspective. But then I had a bunch of people recommend the fifth episode to me. So I ducked in and just watched that. And the second half of it was worth it.
Yeah, that's what I'm hearing. And I've thankfully up to this point avoided knowing what happens. But I got a feeling I should watch it very soon because avoiding a spoiler like that is probably a miracle in and unto itself. So
It's not going to change your life. But like I said, if you are watching it for nostalgia,
it's not going to change my life. I see people on Twitter like saying it was the most emotional thing they've ever seen in their life. And all kinds of other superlatives. And
No, but I dug it. I liked it.
I'd watch that as well tonight.
Did you finish Manhunt, Quinn?
No, I think, and I'm slow watching it too. I think I'm in episode 3.
Okay, so we finished that. It was good. Very, very solid. The ending is a bit of a head scratcher.
It was not.
I didn't expect the ending. I mean, the ending's the ending. But it didn't do any kind of follow up on anything with like any of the. Like what happened, you know, once all these people were caught and rounded up, like there's no, you know, scroll at the end saying like, I don't know, Jefferson Davis was eventually acquitted by, you know, and the whole, so I thought that was weird. It just ended, you know what I mean? So,
yeah, I would encourage people actually to, I mean, the show is not bad, but I would encourage people to read that book. That's an awesome book.
Yeah. The book is definitely, I would say if you know, if you're going to pick one over the other, I would say watch the – or read the book over watching the show. So
yeah. But it's not to say I'm not enjoying the show. I do like it. But it's not enough I got to race home and put on that show.
The last episode is really good from an acting standpoint. The dude who plays Booth, who was also in Masters of the Air, is really good in the last episode. Like, he's just a despicable piece of shit in the entire show.
There's a lot of them.
Yeah. And I started the Sympathizer on HBO, which just kind of came out of nowhere. And I didn't realize Robert Downey Jr. was in it, even though he's on the poster. He's in it. And that's really good. I would recommend that. I'm looking forward
to it. Is he a producer of that show?
Yeah, he is. And he plays apparently four parts in the show total.
What I read, and I don't know if it's true, but it's mainly got an Asian cast, and Robert Downey Jr. plays every white character in the whole show, in the whole series.
Yeah, you told me that, and I was trying to think if there were other white characters in the first episode other than him. I mean, dude, he doesn't even look, I mean, when he talked, I was like, dude, that guy sounds like Robert Downey Jr., and then the eyes kind of give him away. But like the hair is dyed and his eyebrows are dyed.
Yeah.
And his skin has like a completely different complexion than your. It's so weird.
Yeah, but I heard he's like gonna Nutty Professor that whole show.
I wonder why.
I don't know.
Seems like a weird thing to do.
I wouldn't be surprised if they offered it to him so he would do it.
Maybe. Yeah. Yeah, maybe.
He's like, I'll do it if I get to play 10 roles. But that show looks good. You said it's worth watching.
Yeah, I would say it is. I mean, I didn't realize it was every week a drop, so where I might not have started it yet because I immediately wanted to watch the next episode. Episode one ended, and then it went into that. You may also like these shows, and I was like, "What the fuck?" So yeah,
right.
So. So, all right, news. You can use. Sad news to start. Hall & Oates are officially no more.
Aww.
December. I think in our December episode, we talked about how one of them had sued the other one.
Yeah. What's the world coming to?
I know. So John Oates has an album coming out. He's the one that's good, right?
Run right out and get that, right?
Yeah. And he said in Rolling Stone, as far as I'm concerned, I've moved on. I feel like I have a new lease on my creative life. I bet you don't. But good for you. Good for you for feeling that way.
Hey, man. Hey. I enjoy their music. They're talented guys.
It's, man.
I'm not going to shit on John Oates. I love those old songs.
Those old songs are incredible. Yeah. And then Godzilla X Kong, I saw past the $500 million mark worldwide. So we're definitely getting a sequel to that.
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
so is that the benchmark? $500 million guarantees a sequel?
It probably would have gotten a sequel just based off the first weekend alone. I don't think the budget was super high on for this. I don't know. Dutch might know. What was the budget for this movie, Dutch?
Forgot Godzilla X Kong?
Yeah, it was pretty low, right? It's like in the 100 million.
I heard people were saying like 135 million, but that's obviously not including marketing and stuff. I don't know. Especially with all the stuff with like Godzilla Minus One, I'm just like, I don't trust when people say a budget was this low or that low or this bit. You know, it's like, unless it comes from like an official source, you know?
Yeah, you'll never really know. House of the Dragons coming back. We got Game of Thrones news. House of the Dragons coming back June 16th, and the Jon Snow spinoff show, hey, he said it three times fast, has been canceled.
Which I saw that headline that they had canceled it, and the quote that they used, he said something along the lines of "there's just no story to tell."
Yeah, I don't know if that's true, but he's not. I mean, I don't need to find out what happened to Jon Snow after the show ended. I think there's a lot of cool stories you can tell. I love House of the Dragon. Chris Jones, you're a Game of Thrones guy. Did you watch the first season of that?
I have not watched the first season of that. I'm trying to get my wife to.
It's pretty
I'm
good.
To get my wife to watch the Game of Thrones with me. So I'm
You've been trying that for a decade.
Yeah.
Yeah, but here's the thing: we're eight episodes in season one, so it's on pace.
All right. So you're all right.
Yeah. So
well, this takes place a few hundred years before season one.
Right.
Right. So it's not watching this would not spoil anything in the show. I don't think. I can't.
No, I can just go ahead and watch it without having to worry about.
And like honestly, it's really good. Like it's on par with, because you know, Game of Thrones. When I went back and watched parts of it, and then I never finished rewatching it. But in my first watch, I didn't realize it, and then in my rewatch, I realized it. Like the first episode, especially the first like three or four episodes, I should say, look like almost soap opera ish with the sets and stuff. Yeah, budget must have been so low. Like this show, The House of the Dragon has like a fucking crazy big budget.
Okay. Well, they figured out what they were doing, but I don't know. I never really got that sense out of the first one. I remember,
like, go rewatch the joust scene in the first one.
Yeah,
in the first episode, and then watch like the similar scene later on when they're in one of the arenas.
Yeah,
you know, and it's like massive. It looks the one in the first episode looks like something you'd see at the Ren Fair.
It was kind of low budget.
Yeah.
I don't know. I remember that first season, just a couple episodes in, saying, you know, there's nothing like this on TV. I've never seen them take such care in something. I love the first season of Game of Thrones. So sad what happened to that show.
Yeah. It did not stick the landing.
Oh, well.
Yeah. And then another Godzilla news, Monarch Season 2 is confirmed. So that's cool.
Awesome. I still have yet to finish the first season.
I enjoyed it.
Kurt Russell off.
Yeah. Did they, though? I don't know. Spoiler, I don't know if it was.
I know.
Chris Jones.
Well, you guys did that to me before. The last time we talked about it, I hadn't finished it either.
I don't know if he's not definitively dead though, you know, like
it would be like falling off a train going like 150 miles an hour, like the dude
you're dead.
but this is Kurt Russell we're talking about.
Anything's possible, I guess. I hope they manage to do some. I mean, I don't know what else you would do with the 50s stuff because they kind of told their story. So it'd be like, what do you add to that? Because I thought that was the best part, was all the stuff that took place in like the 50s.
Yeah, I think maybe they could jump to like the 70s, maybe, or the 60s, because they're going to start doing. I mean, they at the end of the episode, you got King Kong. So I would assume Kong will be part of season two. So I don't know. I mean, because Skull Island takes place in the 70s, maybe they'll do some flashbacky stuff with Kong. Speaking of flashbacky Kong stuff, the 76 King Kong was on Sunday. I caught it with like an hour and a half left and watched it. It's so good.
I love good. That movie.
So God, good. It's good.
And Jessica Lange is insanely beautiful.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
We just had a 4K Blu-ray set came out. Did you ever get the Shout Factory version that had the
It has the television version on it?
Well, I think if I've read, I think the TV version is also on the new Steelbook that came out from Paramount. But yeah, they did such a good job with that set. I love that awesome. Movie.
I do too. It's definitely got some serious flaws, but it's
for sure
just a great. It's good. The score is really good.
Yeah, that's my favorite John Barry score, and it's my favorite King Kong score. Sorry, Max really Steiner fans, but
no, I mean the Max Steiner score sounds like a score from a 1930s movie. I mean, let's be fair. You know what I mean? Like it's good, but it's very of its time. Like the Kong score, especially it's just really brooding and dark. It's really good. The 76 one.
My favorite cue in that whole score is actually when they're breaching the cloud wall.
Yep, it's awesome.
And it's just like it's a massive sounding cue, but if you listen to it, there's not a whole lot going on orchestration wise. It's, you know, like the strings and a bit of woodwinds, and then the horns are just doing those like majestic, you know, womp, 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 you know,
good flick. What else do I got in the news? I got news for you, Dutch, about your favorite, their film director, Zack Snyder.
what is going on here?
In an interview,
Snyder hate.
Which is funny because I'm wearing my Cavill.
That's you're wearing your, yeah.
That's what you get for missing a week.
That's what. Yeah, you're gonna get hazed. he was asked which controversy from any of his films caught him the most off guard. And he replied, the Martha scene is the one that he was most caught off guard by. So I thought that was interesting. It's such
I think
a
that pretty much summed up. Scene.
He's been saying a lot of things lately.
He seems like a nice guy.
Yeah, by all accounts, he's a great guy. I just don't. His take on these characters, while I liked a lot of aspects of what went on, and I legitimately do like his cut of Justice League. I wish it was like an hour shorter, but you know, I'm not, that's in the past. I'm looking forward to James Gunn and the future of the DCU.
I'm with you. Bolo has made a request. He would like to know if we would all agree to watch the Rebel Moon part one and two.
Absolutely not.
For the podcast.
There you go, Chris Jeffs.
you guys are good guys, but no. I run into a burning building to save you, but no.
The Rebel Moon, no.
Chris Jones, you can record your own episode. I'll put it out under the Gen X Lounge banner. It could just be a special Chris Jones commentary on the Rebel Moon part one and two.
Yeah.
I was like, when he asked, I was like, I don't know, maybe. And then I listened to the Weekly Planet's podcast review of it today, and they just eviscerated it. And I was like, yeah, I don't think I'm going to be able
I saw a trailer for season two, not knowing what it was. And I was like, hey, this looks pretty interesting. And then as soon as, like, Rebel Moon, I was like, oh, that piece of trash, never mind.
Did you watch it, Christian?
No, I haven't seen it at all.
I watched both movies. And I think I sent Quinn a text asking him, hey, would you be interested in watching this? And Quinn never responded. So I'm assuming I'm assuming Quinn read it. It was like, fuck that guy.
At least I responded.
Nothing personal, Chris Jones.
I appreciate you, Brian. Thank you.
In fairness, I never respond to a lot of text.
That makes me feel so much better, Quinn.
And then I saw did you guys see we got some not really behind the scenes pictures, but like first pictures, I guess, of Thunderbolts. We got a few.
No.
You didn't see any of those?
No.
I saw the picture of Harrison Ford and Anthony Mackie.
Anthony Mackie, yeah.
Yeah, I saw that.
And the official title is Thunderbolts with an asterisk next to it.
And that's going to be explained later.
And they said that would be explained by the end of the movie. You would understand why there's an asterisk at the end of it.
Yeah.
They also redesigned the logo, which I thought was like a major downgrade. I was like, come on. We had a great, like that great sort of stylized big block letter logo before. And now it's like,
Yeah.
Oh, well. Right. I'm actually looking forward to that one. I think it's a cool idea. But even the change to it, because in the comics it's a group of supervillains, and this one it's almost like a Marvel Suicide Squad where they're almost anti-heroes that get together. So I think it's a cool concept. So I was dismayed when they said that, you know, that it wasn't happening. There was like controversy. They were going to, cancel it. So I'm glad it's back on.
Yeah. And Red Hulk, apparently Harrison Ford's going to Hulk out. So that's cool.
Yeah. I'm not super enthused about that, but that's all right. I'm more worried than anything. I'm worried that's going to make me embarrassed for Harrison Ford.
Right. I just wanted to. I hope we get behind the scenes footage of them mocapping Harrison Ford, like with all the ping pong balls.
Yeah,
just wondering if are we ever gonna fucking get Savage Hulk back?
Yeah, let's hope.
I don't know. I don't know. MCU, you think they're just gonna stick with Smart Hulk when they do Hulk?
I mean, I love the Professor. I always love the Professor, like in the source material, but like.
Sure.
I don't think we got enough Savage Hulk.
Oh, Age of Ultron sort of Savage Hulk is fantastic.
It's awesome, yeah.
That's the closest we're ever going to get.
I love when his face is like literally quivering with rage. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like he's terrifying in those moments. I love that.
Yeah. Yep. I agree.
All right, let's talk some trailers because we got some trailers.
Coming soon to a theater near you.
Trailers. I guess there's three that I stood out. If you guys have any, feel free to throw them in there. But the first one I saw was Joker 2, which is apparently rated R for strong violence and full nudity. Probably of the Joker.
Yeah. Because I don't think Lady Gaga's getting naked.
Which she did in her Star Is Born movie.
Yeah, I think she did in the that
Masters Gucci of Horror, didn't you?
And just judging from the poster I saw of it, she's barely wearing anything in that anyway. Yeah. But I get the feeling that you're right.
Right now, as we speak.
I get the feeling that you're right that it'll be Joaquin.
Yeah, you're gonna see some Joker dong.
Mm.
Just what I always wanted to see.
Did you guys all see the first one? I did not.
I can't believe you never saw it.
I never wanted to see it. It looks depressing as shit.
Yeah, I bought it. I own it, and I had missed it. I missed it in the theater, and then I just kind of bought it sight unseen. And I thought it was, you know, sort of like a Joker / Batman Elseworlds type of deal. I thought it was solid. So, I mean, I'm looking forward to this one. Everybody's kind of like bitching about like, oh, is it going to be a musical or this and that? I'm like, it could be really bad, but it could also be brilliant. So give it a freaking chance. I'll tell you what, I loved that shot at the end where she draws like the smile with the lipstick on the glass. And then like, Joaquin Phoenix's face kind of lines up and he smiles right with it. Like that was a really, really cool shot.
It's a disturbing image. It's very Joker. You know what I mean? In this format, I mean, the first movie is more so like a take on how the system can fail somebody, and then that's the result. You know what I mean? How you know how? Yeah, it's. I enjoy it from that perspective. You know what I mean?
I was kind of with Dutch too. I went in blind and not really wanting to see it, and I thought it was really good. I mean, it's not something I need to see like multiple times because it is like heavy, I guess.
You have to be in the mood for some real, real heavy, heavy drama.
But Chris Jones, you're right. Like, it is really about it. You could tell it as a different story without it being a Joker story, because it really is just about how the system like completely fails this one dude.
Yeah. And he tried to be good. You know what I mean? Like, I want to do the right thing. I want my medicine. I want to be semi-normal, but you know, it just didn't work out.
And I also liked how they sort of kept the the killing joke sort of idea of like, is he even telling the truth? What you know, because with like the whole thing with what's her name?
His neighbor?
Yeah. That's right, yes. She played Domino in
Deadpool 2.
Deadpool. Yeah. So like the way that that sort of changed at the end, and I like that idea, because even like Heath Ledger did a little bit of that as the Joker. Just like, you don't know what he's telling the truth about and what he's lying about. You don't know how, you know.
Yeah, and like, I can't see Batman in this universe. The Joker would be 75 years old when he would be just getting started. But even in the world, like just the way the world is, though, doesn't seem like that would be a logical.
Yeah, it's a pretty grounded
movie.
Yeah, it's not a choice that you should actually even introduce into this world.
Yeah, I agree. I think this one's going to be a pretty much full-fledged musical, and I wonder how much of it's just going to be him or Harley just in their heads imagining things, because a lot of the shots in the trailer look like, you know, if he's in an insane asylum. Yeah, I don't know. Like, it could be in their heads or whatever. I'm just curious that people go see it not realizing that it's mostly going to be a musical. How that's going to go over. Because that Legally Blonde movie, I know people were pissed about because they went into it not realizing it was a musical. the one that had just come out. Legally Blonde? What the hell am I talking about?
I don't know.
Mean Girls. Legally Blonde.
I'm sitting here. I'm trying to figure it out. Like,
in a Legally Blonde musical.
You actually made me think. Did I miss a Legally Blonde musical?
Yeah, I said the same thing. I'm like, all right.
I didn't see Legally Blonde 1 or 2, so I was just like,
all right. Well, listen. If anybody comes out with a Legally Blonde musical, it was my idea.
So. We have it on record.
Yeah.
I also didn't know you just said Mean Girls was actually a musical.
Yeah, so there was a Mean Girls. There's a Broadway show, and they did a movie based on the Broadway show. And a lot of people went to that thinking it was like a sequel to Mean Girls, and it was a musical. And they were and then the other big trailer that I saw last week, and I haven't seen a trailer in a while that kind of made me just not be able to, man, it was the Transformers 1 trailer. because I thought when they said they were doing a full CGI Transformers movie that goes back, it's like a prequel to before the whole war on Cybertron and everything, where Optimus Prime is still Orion Pax, and him and Megatron are sort of like brothers in arms, in some sort of a rebellion, that it would be like the first like 10 minutes of the Bumblebee movie, which is fucking awesome.
Yeah.
And holy shit, man, that trailer is as far as that away from that as you can possibly get. Like, what the fuck, dude? It's like a DreamWorks.
Did you not see it?
Oh my God, dude.
I didn't watch it.
So I was going to ask you, dude, but like, wasn't there any like, and, like, I'm not like a big Transformers like fan. Like, I'm kind of like a casual fan at best. So I didn't really know a whole lot about the production of this movie. Wasn't there like any, you didn't see anything prior to the trailer that made you sort of think that it might be going along those lines?
No, I don't even think I saw any like still images or anything up until I saw the trailer.
And is it like happy go lucky? Is it not serious? Like what?
It's trash,
dude. I wish you watched it. It's bad, dude. You need to watch it because, like, I was just like, what the fuck? Like, watching in my office, I think I said what the fuck two or three times because I was so did not expect this at all. You know what I mean?
Can you pinpoint exactly what it is as a Transformers fan that's making you worry about it?
I mean, just the silliness of it, and
it's for kids.
Yeah, and look, like, I get it. A lot of people are like, you got to understand, it's for kids. You know what, though? Transformers the movie in 1986 was for kids, and that movie fucking rocks. So, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
No, I don't know. Yeah, like, I don't know. I mean, you can make a kid's movie and have it still be serious. It doesn't have to be stupid, you know?
Speaking of which, in that vein, I was really excited. Who the hell knows if it'll actually happen, but that they're supposedly developing a Last Ronin live-action Ninja Turtles film that's going to be rated R, and I'm like,
rated R, yeah.
Yeah. Have any of you guys read Last Ronin?
Every time you ask, I'm like, I have it, and I'm going to read it.
Oh,
it's my son's
book. And I think I might read it.
It's great. Yeah. It is so great. It's like, it's just so funny how like deep the Ninja Turtles lore can go. If like you're really embracing like the comics and like sort of like the grittier part of it. And even like the Nickelodeon show really did a good job expanding into that. But yeah, just that idea, if they really stick to their guns and they're like, because, like, how, you know, it's like presenting a movie like Mutant Mayhem, and then if you're going to do The Last Ronin, you're going to do The Last Ronin good.
You can't do it like, it would be like if the trailer for The Last Ronin came out and it was in the style of Mutant Mayhem. And, like, and I like Mutant Mayhem, you know what I mean? But you would be like, what the fuck is this? If that's how they were doing The Last Ronin, you know what I mean? Yeah. Like, that's how I felt about this trailer. Like, whatever. There have been Transformers, you know, things that they're not all for me. I get it. There are.
Right.
Goes directly for kids, and like that's fine, but and part of it's probably my own fault because I just saw CGI Transformers prequel, you know, movie, and I was like, oh, this is exactly what I've been wanting forever,
right?
And it's not.
That was gonna be my first thought, though, is, you know, how dare they make a cartoon robot movie for kids instead of 50
toys? Yeah, I know, damn it. Yeah, I know. Yesterday we got the big trailer, the Wolverine trailer. I've watched a couple times and looks
that movie.
It looks really good.
Although I have one quip. Am I going to say it? Quite a
quibble.
Gripe. I have one gripe. I love the fact that we're getting, you know, sleeveless Wolverine, kind of like, you know, like to even further go with the classic blue and yellow. Why did they take the shoulder guards off? That's like part of the look, like the blue shoulder.
Well, he's wearing them in part of the trailer.
He has them when he has his sleeves on, but then when the sleeves come off, the shoulder pads come off.
Yeah,
that's me. I'm just being a nitpicking dickhead.
The costume designer said we can't see his shoulder muscles.
That's probably it.
That's exactly what they said.
We gotta show those garden hoses that are flowing across his muscles.
Yeah. That could come directly from Jackman, where he's like, I work too hard. You get these off of here right now.
Yeah, you cut this off because he looked at the daily.
All he had to do was train his arms this time. We're not even seeing his abs. Or...
Yeah.
He looks good.
Yeah.
I loved the profanity. I loved the violence. We've talked about it before. I'm not crazy about the multiverse stuff. I'm sick of it. In fact, like, the Deadpool is probably the only character that can set it right. You know what I mean? At this point, where I, like, if this was a regular Marvel movie or another one that just was coming out with a multiversal story, I would have very little interest.
I think he's going to fix them. I think the goal is for him to reset all of it.
It needs to. Yeah. So I'm looking forward to it in that regard. Boy, Jackman looks fantastic. He really does. I love that one scene where the claws come out and they're longer than we're used to. That was
They don't look like big steak knives. They look like like the comic claws, which is cool.
Exactly. Big steak knives. That's true.
And the thing was, in that one shot, when you take a look, it's very comic book accurate because it's coming off the top of the glove with those little,
from between the knuckles.
It's beautiful, and that's I looked at that not so much the claws coming out. I looked at the glove in that shot. I was like, they nailed it.
How hard is it really? Like, there's so many. We've watched a ton of these movies over the years, and there's so many needless changes.
Right.
Mm-hmm. The needless changes started with the first X-Men movie. Look at the influence the black leather outfits had just across the genre, even into comic books. Like, I liked it at the time. I thought it was fine, but it's like, we like these characters to look the way we remember them, and it's like, do you want yellow spandex? You're damn right, Scott Summers, we do.
But it goes into that discussion that we talked about before with Zack Snyder. It's like they don't believe that those characters can play the way they were originally envisioned. So they have to make them seem real to people that aren't fans.
Yeah.
And, you know, people love these characters for a reason. You can trust that. You can trust that. So
you're not going to do any better than 80 years of mythology has done.
Yeah, sort of for real.
Distilled down I love, and part of the reason I don't even get into the discourse anymore because it's just insufferable with some of these people, and just Twitter is a hellscape, so I don't even do it. I don't do it on there at all really anymore. I can't stand that whole when someone's trying to say this movie or this movie was comic accurate, just cherry picking one panel or something here without even paying attention to what the larger picture is. And you know, old Batman and Superman killed in their first appearances or in their early appearances. No shit, they did. You know, then the creators went back after, because nobody thought these things were going to be cultural icons. They were just cartoon characters essentially for the funny papers or whatever. And then it's like they become popular. You know, but Bill Finger starts to flesh out Batman. Okay, you know, let's make it so he doesn't kill. And the reason he doesn't kill is because his parents were killed. The reason he doesn't use ballistic shells is because his parents were killed by a gun. And, you know, refining Superman as well. And it's I've been challenged on my love of Superman the movie. Like, because Superman the movie at the time, the comic book Superman, I think at the time was a little bit different. Like, Clark Kent wasn't really a newspaper reporter. I think he was like a host of a talk show or something. So they'll use shit like that and they'll say, well, that movie's not comic book accurate. I'm like, for the time, maybe not, but you know what it was? It was Superman accurate.
Yeah.
Yes, it was.
That's what these movies need to be. You can do original stuff. You can do different takes on stuff, but you can't betray the essence of the character. And I feel like some people just don't understand.
Oh, you mean like having him kill Zod at the end of Man of Steel?
I'll be honest with you. I didn't get as pissed about that as other people did because I grew up with what's called the Triangle Era of Superman comics in the 90s. So anything from Jerry Ordway, Dan Jurgens, like the John Byrne late era from like the late 80s, early 90s up through like the Death of Superman and all that. So Superman in that era actually killed General Zod. He had basically a different version of Feor named Zeora, and he used yellow kryptonite to kill them so that led to a great all-time great Superman storyline in the comics called Exile, where Superman was he was afraid, he was having nightmares and turning into like a nighttime vigilante and not remembering it. And he was becoming brutal. So he purposely takes himself off Earth to different worlds because he doesn't feel like he can trust himself. And I was hoping that Man of Steel, before it was going to be Batman v Superman, if they were going to go with actually make a proper Man of Steel sequel, I was hoping that that was going to tie into it. There was going to be a reckoning, and his character would have some kind of like a, it would be something he'd have to like contend with, so that in the second movie, when he defeats the bad guy, he's going to be like, no matter what, I'm not going to kill you. I'm going to find a way to beat you without killing you. Like, and that, and that's the part in Man of Steel where they just, they get it wrong with just with fundamental villain writing, because Zod looks at Superman and he's like, you know, there's only one way this ends, Cal. Either you die or I do. And that's exactly what happens, which means the bad guy won.
Yep.
Right. But also, big picture, what are you going to do? Where can you put Zod? So that's that. It's a means to an end. He has to kill him, because there's no red cell prison.
It's a movie. The writers could have put any scenario they wanted into, and they're like, hey, let's put him in the no-win situation where we have to ruin the character.
I was going
to
say, the other ones got sucked back into the Phantom Zone. You could have put him back into the Phantom Zone, you know what I mean? Or they could have had, you know, well, Kryptonite didn't come into play until Batman v Superman, but like, there were a lot of ways you could have did that. And in fact, from what I remember, Zack Snyder, I think, even said, Chris Nolan wanted him to not kill Zod, and Zack Snyder fought for him to kill Zod. Are you surprised?
No,
I'm not surprised.
Not at all.
Zack Snyder wants to do exactly what you say you can't do with these characters,
which is not always a good thing to do. Just because
that's what he wants to do. And also, after Watchmen, he's like, you can't. His thing is, you can't tell me what I can't do with these characters after I've done Watchmen.
No, but we can hate you for that
interview.
Yeah.
I think somebody should have told him that he can't throw a giant saran wrap S around Zod to capture him. that would have been the coolest way to end the movie.
You didn't see that coming, did you?
Yeah. You know, when I saw that as a kid, I didn't even blink. I just rolled with it. I'm like, all right, this is happening.
Yep. Yeah. Superman can kiss a chick and give her amnesia and make her not remember that they had a romantic getaway while the world was getting destroyed. And
that works. Completely sold. I was like, yep, he's an alien space wizard. He can do whatever he wants.
As I get older, like, I find myself liking Superman 2 less and less, to be honest.
I mean, it's a very, very, very of its time.
Yeah,
you know. It is, but it's just there's just certain things in that movie. Like, whereas I'm like an unabashed fan of Superman for the Quest for Peace. I freaking love it.
That's a bold take. You know what?
I'm not saying it's a good movie. I'm just saying I love it.
What they try to do with the whole you know get rid of nuclear arms. That was cool, because nuclear war, I mean, and Quinn has talked about this in other movies, how nuclear wars type stuff is terrifying. Yeah. So to have a superhero rid the planet of these weapons, that was a very feel-good, you know.
And it was very of the time, too.
Yeah, yes, because Reagan was like, you know, go bring down your wall, all that stuff. But it's just like that was very cool in that time, and to have one of our favorite characters do that, you know, let's get rid of nuclear weapons.
And then get drunk in costume.
Yeah, yeah.
That was Superman 3.
That was it.
Sex. Yeah. And had sex.
Oh, yeah. That is
Superman. Great...
You're
Superman
right.
Knocked off the blonde with the big knockers. That is true.
Wait, what?
What are you talking about? You see Superman.
Miss Tessmacher?
No, you're talking about Superman 3. Yeah, when Superman turns into an asshole. Yeah.
Yeah, I get them confused.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's when Christopher Reeve and him fight in the junkyard, right? Like Clark Kent. Yeah. And it also has that terrifying as a kid where she transforms into a robot.
That is terrifying.
Yeah.
That was a little scary.
Yeah, hell yeah.
A little scary.
Yeah. All right, let's go back in the day, because we got some stuff back in the day to talk about.
Back in the day!
Just as an aside, I saw yesterday in 1980... No, not yesterday, but yesterday was the anniversary of 1986, when Geraldo Rivera opened Al Capone's vault. Remember that?
Yes, I do.
Man, what a night that was.
So please refresh my memory. What happened when they opened that vault? What did they find?
What do you think? A bottle of gin and some dirt. They did. They found an empty bottle, an empty liquor bottle, and some dirt. That's what was in Al Capone's vault. It was a 2-hour live special.
It had been hyped for weeks.
Yeah, 30 million people watched it. And So that was the anniversary of that. I do remember that quite well.
It's amazing that he continued to have a career after that.
Yeah. Was that?
But it was one of those things like, oh, he's really going to make a name for himself with this special. And then, oh my gosh, just to fail that hard on live TV with 30 million people.
Yeah.
Yeah.
A smug prick.
You wasted everybody's time.
So we're going to go to 1994 this week because there was something happened in 1994. But before we do that, I figure we could do the top 10 songs of this week, the week of 4/21/1994.
Hello again, and welcome to American Top 40. My name's Casey Kasem, and we're about to count down the 40 biggest hits in the USA.
A big difference from the top 10 that we did 2 weeks ago, which was 1986, I want to say. Music changed a lot in the intervening years. I also totally forgot to do song number 6 last episode as well. It was a Survivor song, but I can't remember what the name of it was. Sorry, Survivor. anyway, number 10 for this week in 1994 is this. Dude, some of this music sucks. Here we go.
Every way I can, now and forever.
Oh.
This is terrible.
I will be your man.
Is that Richard Marx?
That's Richard Marx, Now and Forever. Yeah. That was the number 10 song. Yeah, right. Number 9 song is a song that. Actually, an artist entirely that I have shit on for years, and I'm actually starting to appreciate more. So the number 9 song is this one.
I love this tune.
Yeah, it's a good song.
Bruised and battered, I couldn't tell what I felt. I was unrecognizable to myself.
What year is this?
94.
94.
Know my own face, oh brother.
So this is Streets of Philadelphia by The Boss.
From the movie.
Yeah, from the movie.
Cool fact about that. The music video is actually, it sounds a little bit different than like the album take. But he sang, like Bruce Springsteen, when he was walking around, supposedly, just sang a cappella perfectly. So that they could get like the sounds of the city. So like... In the video, if what I read was correct, what you're hearing of him singing is what he was singing live while they were doing like the walkthroughs and stuff, and then the music added later.
Interesting.
I love that tune. It's a great tune.
I'm going to go rewatch the video later.
Yeah.
Number 8. What a juxtaposition of songs. Here's number 8.
What a man, what a man.
That's a great song.
In Vogue.
By what?
By who?
In Vogue. In Vogue.
In Vogue. Put your back card away.
I'm ready.
Salt and pepper.
In Vogue.
Excuse me. The woman actually singing in the background. Is in Vogue.
Yeah, it's definitely in Vogue.
Yeah. It's salt and pepper. Yes. You are actually right.
Thank you very much.
In a sense,
it's a technicality,
but in a sense, you're also wrong.
I said salt and pepper and in Vogue.
Oh, you did. Okay, I thought you.
I didn't hear the end. I thought you just said it was in Vogue. I'm like, well,
it's a collaboration,
kind of close, but
yeah, but it was collaboration. You're right.
I'm right.
And who was in that video enjoying him some whichever one it was. Tupac's in that video.
Oh, really?
Is he really?
Yeah.
See, 1994, I feel like, is right in your wheelhouse. Like, I was way out of, like, listening to top 40. Whatever was in the top 40 in 94, I was probably had no... Other than one specific song in this list, I can remember digging. but it's not this next one that's coming up, which is number 7.
Oh, good Lord.
That's enough.
We got two.
Love this playlist.
I know you're bopping to every song,
dude. This is my jam. Like, I'm a '90s kid. What do you want?
I feel like I'm in my mother's car.
That's number 7, "The Power of Love" by Celine Dion. We're all gonna like this one though, because this is a legit classic. Number 6.
Good.
You ever hear the director Kevin Smith talk about trying to get Prince to give him that song for one of his movies? And Prince was like, "No, you can have Morris Day though." Morris Day at the time come in the movie.
Didn't Kevin Smith have some other crazy Prince story where Prince just had like tons and tons and tons?
Yeah, he brought him up to Minnesota to do a documentary on him.
Yeah.
And then he never released it. Like he said, I don't know if he ever watched it. He just put it away.
There was some major beef there or something like that, because I guess like Kevin Smith never signed an NDA, so he was allowed to like tell the whole story afterwards, and Prince was like wanting to sue him, but he's like, "Yeah, no, I never signed his NDA. They gave it to me, but I just threw it away."
All right, number 5. And I guess this was like a popular type of music. Like, I don't know. I'm glad this music's not popular anymore. It's annoying. I mean, it was fine. It's very of its time.
Like, the fighting words are coming in. I'm like, what's he going to do?
Right, well, here's number 5.
As we stroll along together.
It's like... something you would see in a movie where like a bunch of guys are singing around a bonfire in a can. Who is this?
I don't even know. It's some
All for One.
All for
So
One.
Much Love. It was the number 5 song. Yeah. And then we got the number 4 song, which is the only song on here that I may have actually bought this album based on this song. I don't remember, but I'm pretty sure I had it.
Yeah.
How do you know it instantly?
I was obsessed with this song.
Such a strange song. And where does this fit in with the rest of the music that we've listened to so far? Like, it's so odd.
This is Crash Test Dummies. They were Canadian, man. Canadians are weird. What are you gonna do? Where on the chart was? Where on the chart did this peak? I wonder.
I don't know. I didn't deep dive.
The fucking Weird Al version of that song is the best. It's called Headline News. It is the best.
Well, just based on that, they got to do a cover of "You're a Mean One, Mr. Grinch." Right after that, so it's like, I know what this voice can sing.
Yeah. Then we got number 3, which is actually a pretty banger. I'm not gonna lie, this is a pretty good one. Mariah Carey covering. I can't live anymore. So that's a cover. That was an original. That was written in 1970 by Badfinger. It was covered. It's been covered by 180 artists.
Whoa.
Wow.
Yeah. And the version I remember and grew up with is the Harry Nilsson version. Which actually played the other night on our, we listened to 70s music at dinner, and it came on. It's this one here. This is the one I remember.
Yeah.
He named his album Nilshin Smilshin. That's the name of this album that this is off.
That's just like, that's like a sarcastic response. Like, you were just, yeah, Nilshin Smilshin.
Yeah. that's pretty funny. Number two. Okay, ready for this one to be stuck in your head for the rest of the night. Sorry.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. There it is. That's all the time.
Yeah, that song could come out today. Like, Dua Lipa could put that out, no one would notice.
Nope.
Yeah. So, music number one. The number one song this week in 1994. Dutch, you going to guess what it was?
Okay, hang on, hang on. Number one song, 1994. This week, did you say?
Yep. Yeah, this week.
This week it is April.
Famous R&B singer. I'll give you a hint.
Famous R&B singer.
He's been canceled. He's been canceled.
R. Kelly.
R. Kelly.
You got the artist. Can you guess the song?
I
Believe I Can Fly.
Yep. Chris Jones got it.
The jury saw it differently.
Yeah,
Believe I Can Fly came out a couple years later.
Okay. I came out with Space Jam.
Yeah. I wouldn't say R. Kelly got canceled. He kind of really did that.
He deserved it.
It's not cancellation if you just, you know, had a cult and like sexually abused like a bunch of people.
I cannot think of R. Kelly without thinking of Dave Chappelle.
That's the best.
Oh my god. What a genius.
Yeah.
Oh my god.
So there's a guy on this list that has a horrible past and is a horrible human being. And you would think I'm talking about R. Kelly, but I'm not. I'm not talking about you. I'm talking about R. Kelly. No, I'm not talking about R. Kelly. I'm talking about. So when I was making the list up, I have like a weird memory. Like I remembered something I had read years ago in Cracked. Remember Cracked.com?
It was
awesome for a while. It's garbage now, but back in like 2015, I read this article about Ace of Base and Cracked. So I Googled it, and then I went back. So the Cracked article is based on an article that was written originally in Vice for Vice magazine, or Vice One, probably back in 2013, about Ace of Base. And it's about Ulf Ekberg, who is one of the dudes in Ace of Base. And this is from Vice magazine. Before he founded Ace of Base, Ulf Ekberg was a Nazi skinhead. Did Ekberg use Ace of Base's success as an opportunity to erase his neo-Nazi past and rise to a position of influence? His Nazi punk band, Commit Suicide, which sang songs with explicit racist lyrics, such as "Men in white hoods march down the road. We injure ourselves when we're sawing off," and I won't say the word, "heads. Immigrant, we hate you. Out, out, out. Nordic people, wake up. Shoot, shoot, shoot." So shortly,
he went from that to Ace of Base.
Yeah. So shortly after this band Commit Suicide broke up, one of the other members of the band was convicted of illegal firearms possession and sending death threats to a Jewish theater director. He was outspoken against racism and Nazism. Other songs by his band were "Don't Touch Our Country," "White Power," "Black Skull Slaughter." Is another hit. Yeah, they're not on Spotify. In August of 1990, a guy named Jonas Berggren, who also ends up in Ace of Base, was hours away from playing a show with his band, who'd been performing for several years as various names like Cad, Tech Noir, or Callan in Prospect. At the last minute, their bass player decided to ditch the show and go watch the Rolling Stones on the other side of town. So this Bergeron guy asked Ekberg, who was his friend, to fill in on bass. A few weeks later, they dubbed their new lineup Ace of Bass, and the rest is history.
Wow.
Yeah. So in a documentary in 97, he is quoted as saying, "I told everyone I really regret what I did. I've closed the book. I don't even want to talk about it. That time does not exist in me anymore, and I threw the book away in 1987. I learned from the experience, but that life is not me. It's somebody else." It's easy to say.
So it's a redemption story.
Jackass, yes. And in the Cracked article, there's an interesting theory that the band is actually named after the submarine base, the Nazi submarine base in Karaman submarine base, because it's a place where all of the top U-boat captains would carry out their missions, and it was dubbed the Base of Aces.
Okay.
So make of that what you will. Yeah.
Right on.
Well, thanks for ruining all those great songs for me.
Well, were they really that great to begin with?
Yes.
All that she wants. Listen to the lyric. Like, actually read the lyrics to "All That She Wants Is Another Baby" or whatever the hell that song's called. You know that song? It's just about like a woman like milking the system. Like, it's that stereotypical, like, she wants to get pregnant so she can milk the system. That's basically what the lyrics are. Huh. So she doesn't have to work, basically.
Wow.
Yeah, man. The So also in 1994, if you were watching TV, and this didn't happen, this isn't the anniversary of this. This happened in July. In June. So if you were watching TV, and pretty much like whatever you were watching that night got interrupted. If you're watching Larry King, this is what you would have heard.
I'm going to interrupt this call. I understand we're going to go to a live picture in Los Angeles. Is that correct? Okay. This is Interstate 5, and this is courtesy of KCALR, one of our L.A. affiliates. Police believe that O.J. Simpson is in that car. Now they're telling me that they believe that this vehicle is registered to Al Cowlings, one of OJ's oldest friends, a teammate at Southern Cal.
So, yeah, no matter what you were watching, like, your shit got interrupted because OJ Simpson was driving very slowly. Well, he wasn't driving. He was being driven very slowly.
Didn't they preempt the NBA Finals?
Yeah, I was that's what I was watching. It was game 5.
The other thing I was watching NBA
Finals, yeah. So, like, a little background on that. On June 12th, Nicole Brown Simpson and Rod Goldman were stabbed to death outside of Nicole Brown Simpson's house. OJ was determined to be the prime suspect and was ordered to turn himself into the LAPD, and he did not do that. He was declared a fugitive. And then because he didn't do that, one of the most watched events in TV history happened on Friday, June 17th. Like we said, it was like everything basically was interrupted. So traveling
for a low speed chase.
Low speed car chase. For 60 miles. They drove 60 miles. They along the Santa Ana Freeway, the Artesia Freeway, the San Diego Freeway. It began at 5:56 p.m. He reached his Brentwood home at 7:57 p.m. Like I said, the chase interrupted game 5 of the NBA Finals between the Knicks. And hey, the Knicks, they were relevant in 1994. And the Houston Rockets. And by the time the Bronco pulled into the Brentwood Estate, it's estimated that there were 100 million people watching on TV.
Amazing.
It really was. And like, it's one of those things that you probably, if you were alive at that time and old enough, know what you were doing. You know what I mean? Like, when that happened. And it's weird because it's not like a tragic, it's not like 9/11 or the Challenger exploding. Like, it's just this weird fucking thing that happened.
Well, it's something you don't see every day. A Hall of Fame football guy. He was threatening to kill himself, wasn't he? While he was in the back.
He had a gun.
Wasn't Al Cowlings the one who was driving the Bronco?
Yeah. Al Cowlings was the one that was driving.
Yeah. And he was also, if I remember, Al Cowlings was also on the phone with the cops.
He was. And he was like, I think, shouting to him like when they were getting up beside the Bronco.
Yeah.
And then there was like, it was amazing because like there were people when they figured out what the route was that they were traveling. There were like people on the overpasses with signs,
go OJ, run OJ.
And think about it, just put it into context. This is post, you know, Rodney King. So
yeah.
The climate, like the racial climate in LA at the time was already just sort of like a powder keg if it wasn't before.
Yeah, if you haven't watched it, the 30 for 30 that ESPN did about OJ, I think it's OJ Made in America, maybe?
Mm.
Or maybe I'm thinking of a different one. There, it's make sure it's the ESPN when it's like five parts.
Are you thinking of the one?
It is. It is.
Because they did that series with, was it Cuba Gooding Jr.?
No, this isn't a series like a doc. This isn't like a docudrama. This is like a legit documentary.
Okay, you said that was a 30 for 30, or
it's a 30 for 30. Yeah,
I think there's one on HBO Max, if I'm not mistaken. And that may be the one, but I think it might be Made in America.
Yeah, it dives into all of the stuff that was going on in the country at that time. There were a lot of things going on, that led to really
it's called OJ Made in America 30.
It's a five-part
series.
Yeah, this isn't a true crime. This isn't a true crime podcast. So, like, for you know, I'm not going to get. We don't know. We don't know all the facts. What's the documentary? Damn it! But yeah, all the broadcast networks carried it live. Non-news cable channels broke into their regular programming to show it. On NBC, which was showing the game, they actually split the screen in half with the game on one half of the screen and the Bronco chase on the other. And then at one point, if my memory isn't wrong, I want to say the Bronco chase was taking up a good like
75-80%
of the screen, and the actual finals game was And this is back in a time when a big TV and your would have been like a 32-inch TV would have been like the biggest TV you had. Yeah. It was unheard of. I think we had a 19-inch TV in our living room. Like,
so you had a thumbnail of the game.
Yeah. Basically, it was like a GIF.
then OJ got his dream team.
Yeah. And according to CNN's 25th anniversary article, which was published a few years ago, it was watched in a way we don't watch events now. People stood in large groups in front of televisions. In homes, bars, restaurants, and other public spaces, and just gawked at the spectacle. That's how the nation put in big televised events in the era before the internet, smartphones, and social media.
I don't recall another moment like that until 9/11.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Where people were just riveted and staring at the phone.
Yeah, watching everything something unfold in real time, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think that the whole court case itself was a catalyst for like a ton of reality TV, because the court case was like the thing everybody talked about it every single day at work.
Yep.
Like, I remember every day at work, somebody was talking about the court case. You went into the break room and the court case was on TV in the break room. Like it was like the first time ever that I can think. And I mean, there probably have been prior to, you know, my lifetime, celebrity like murder cases or whatever that were, that captured the country, but not in the way like this did, where this was like 24 hours a day.
Yeah.
Because not, like a, not like a newspaper.
Not only from, you know, his sports career, but the whole Naked Gun movies. You know what I mean? Yeah. And then what was funny, and this may be a little tidbit that, you know, you may or may not know, he was originally cast as the Terminator.
Terminator.
Not true.
Wait, do we have, I just had deja vu. Did we have this discussion a couple episodes ago?
I thought we had this discussion.
I think we did. I think Dutch said not true.
I
check the tape,
because I used to say that too. I used to think that too, because that was always the longest rumor that like they didn't cast him because they didn't think anybody would buy him as a killer,
ruthless
killer. But Gail Ann Hurd very recently, I follow Gail Ann Hurd on Twitter, and very recently in the wake of his death, someone asked her, "Is this true?" And she said, "No." She's like, "I don't know where that rumor ever came about. We never considered O.J. Simpson for the role of Terminator. It was Lance Henriksen was the original idea, and then for the Terminator to be sort of like a very nondescript, you know, smaller sort of individual that could disappear in and out of crowds, and then eventually we get Arnold, who can't, you'll see him, you know, coming from a fucking mile away."
Right.
People need to remember, like, if you're not our age or older. Like OJ, like now OJ Simpson immediately, you say OJ Simpson, the immediate image is a guy who got away with killing his ex-wife.
Right.
That, I mean, dude, people loved OJ Simpson. Like everybody loved OJ Simpson. He was like,
let me ask a question. Who here on the podcast believes he did it?
Oh, I 100% believe he did it.
Okay.
Yeah. I don't think there's any question here's well, I'll throw this though. I 100% believe he did it. I also 100% believe he was framed for doing it.
That there was evidence planted.
Yeah, I believe. Yeah, absolutely. I believe he.
What was the cop's name? Mark Furman? Was that the main dude?
Yeah, I believe the cops were dirty. I believe the prosecution was incompetent.
They were so.
And I believe he had the best lawyers that literally money could buy.
He had Johnny Cochran, F. Lee Bailey, Robert Shapiro, Robert Kardashian, Alan Dershowitz. Funny enough, Alan Dershowitz, I used to have to put him on the air all the time when I was working at an unnamed news organization in New York City. And I had a coworker who just for the hell of it just asked him. He's like, did OJ do it? And then that Dersh was just like, attorney client. He answered it pretty standard, like attorney client privilege. I cannot talk about blah, 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 blah. And I was like, man, it's kind of funny that he even took the opportunity to ask that. But I mean, that's your talk. You can't get any better when it comes like they called it the dream team. Like I said,
Well, if you watch that documentary, the big thing of the case was like he tried the gloves on, the gloves didn't fit. Like, and the question first is like, why the fuck would you ask him to try the gloves on? The gloves had been stored for months. The gloves had been covered in blood, which obviously is going to make them shrink. He was wearing gloves. On top of that, he was
not only that he had
arthritis, and he was told by his lawyers a week or two beforehand, stop taking your arthritis medicine because they knew it was going to make his hands swell up.
Yeah.
So it was just, a lot of incompetence. Like Judge Ito, it was one of the few judges I can name. Supreme Court judge. According to the documentary and a lot of other things I've read, like, really lost control of the courtroom a lot of times too. Like it was a whole, it was a perfect storm for doing some murdering. If you're a really, really rich, famous guy.
It did give us that great Simpsons episode where OJ comes and befriend. No, is it? It's Family Guy, right? Where OJ comes and is a friend the whole time. He's like misunderstood, and people's like, "Well, I'm sorry, OJ." And there's a huge crowd of people at the end there to say sorry to him, and then he just stabs a guy, Russell.
Dude, and it's funny because like people are like going back and like rediscovering the brilliance of Norm MacDonald on Weekend Update.
Oh yeah.
11 minutes of him just roasting OJ
after he was told not to because
that's what got him fired.
Yeah,
right?
So the CEO was a friend of OJ's.
Yeah, Lauren
Michaels. He's like, stop doing the OJ jokes.
the deadpan after he gives the punchline.
Yeah.
Oh, after the verdict, he goes, "It's official. Murder is legal in California." Oh,
wow.
The glove thing also gave us that great Seinfeld gag when Kyle's Hazard try on the bra over top of the clothing.
Yeah, yeah. It's supposed to be up against the skin like a glove.
So good.
He was super, super famous. I mean, I remember commercials with him in it. I was too young to remember him as any kind of football player. Yeah. But I mean, he was in tons of movies. Yeah, and dude, he's that sequence of him in the wheelchair rolling down the stairs to the stadium and over is one of the funniest things in any of those movies. Like, it's so fucking funny.
Officer Nordberg.
Well, not anymore. It's not. But it was.
It was funny.
So here's a question for you guys, because this was an interesting point when I was I forget what I was listening to, but it was like. Because you guys saw, like, the day he died, how many, like, outlets, like, put out, like, obituaries for him, and they totally softballed it. Like,
oh, yeah.
OJ Simpson, that, yeah. Hall of Fame running back with a complicated pass, or and then like the official social media account of like Heisman freaking put out like, you know, Heisman Trophy winner OJ Simpson, just like a straight in like memorial sort of card. And I'm like, okay, if OJ Simpson isn't as infamous as he is for the murder trial and stuff like that, and he dies today, is he anything more than like a sidebar somewhere? Or like, I mean, it's
like, do you think he still would have been a famous? I mean, I don't know.
Well, he had an announcing career on top of his football career. And that probably would have gone. Was he a current announcer when that happened? Was that his gig? Or had he retired from it?
But I mean, dude, they would have brought
him. I think he was still doing it. So, like, it would have been notable. Like, if I'm trying to think of it, if Michael Irvin dies, you know what I mean? It's going to be, you'll get more than a sidebar.
I was going to say, the Eagles fans aren't going to be too unhappy about that.
Well, I mean, the world won't stop, but you'll hear about it. You know, he was great. And at the time, you know, he was one of the greatest of all time. You know what I mean? He's since been surpassed by a bunch of people. But at the time, OJ was right at the near the top of the list.
So, well, you know what he did in that, when he rushed for 2,000 yards, is insane.
He's just a beast.
That team was horrifically bad. He was basically the entire team.
And that's when they had 14 games, right? Or did he make it to the 16 game?
I think it was a 14 game season too, which is crazy. Yeah.
But so he would have had that reputation, but you know, then he had to go murder people.
So fuck that guy.
Yeah.
Ron Goldman just happens to arrive at the wrong place at the wrong freaking time.
Well, he was bringing her keys to her or something, right? Because she left
her glasses.
Like, but to your point, Dutch, I think they have to softball it because he was found innocent. You know what I mean? So there's probably legal reasons he can't say, hey, murderer O.J. Simpson.
I guess at that point, why even acknowledge it? I mean, I don't know.
Certain outlets didn't acknowledge it. Like the Bills put out a statement, but they certainly didn't say. I mean, they just said, you know, he rushed for 2,000 yards and part of Bill's history or something, you know. I don't know. I mean, what you have to acknowledge it because of how
it would have been a bigger statement if they didn't do anything.
Just a guy who played special teams on the Bills in 1974,
right?
He would have just been some guy who died, you know. But it
was interesting to see the reaction, it really was, like across social media.
Yeah, my friend, a buddy of mine, JJ Garvine, he's a good friend of mine. He sent me an interesting nugget of trivia. Now he said, now that O.J. Simpson has died, Priscilla Presley is the only living person on the Naked Gun 33 and a third poster.
That's true. Wait, is it? I thought that poster was just Leslie Nielsen like shooting bullets like through his leg and stuff.
I don't know. I don't know if it's true.
It's funny because 33 and a third came out, I think, in 94.
Did it really?
Yeah. I 93 or 94, but I think it was 1994.
In the summer?
That I don't remember.
I feel like it would have got pulled.
Yeah.
No, probably would have. Naked Gun.
Dude, I cannot type to save my life. Yeah, Baked Gun. That's what I want.
Baked Gun. Yeah, March 18th, 1994. All right.
So this was in June. The car chase was in June.
Yeah, so yeah, it was not much before. So that's crazy. So he was
in a fairly big
movie that had come out So crazy. Crazy, crazy, crazy. So yeah, he died. You know, it's funny. He died 2 days after I bought my first ever Bronco.
I wonder where the white Bronco is.
The white Bronco that had all the DNA evidence and things in it, because there were two different Broncos. I don't know if they were both white, but he had a Bronco as well.
Well, the one that Chase happened in.
The Chase Bronco, I think I read, it was destroyed. I know the other one was destroyed, the one that had the blood in it. That one was destroyed right after he was found not guilty. So, yeah. Anywho,
yeah,
that's the show. That's the show, guys.
Wait, I'll add one more thing. Do you guys? We may have talked about this before. Like, anybody like pro wrestling?
Yeah, I'm a fan.
So I mean, I was a much bigger fan. Yeah. In the 90s.
Well, in 1996, I think it was WrestleMania 12. If you remember, Gold Dust, Dustin Rhodes, and Rowdy Roddy Piper had a Hollywood backlot brawl where they were just they were fighting in like an alley in the alley behind wherever I think they were in Anaheim, and Gold Dust gets in his Cadillac and drives away, and Roddy Piper gets in a white Bronco and goes after him. A couple minutes later, whatever, like one or two matches later, you hear, you know, like scummy Vince McMahon is like, "Oh, I think we have footage of what's going on." And they showed the fucking chase footage. They showed the cops, and like you hear Jerry Lawler's like, "Oh, somebody already called the cops." They showed like the legit OJ footage.
That's pretty good.
Oh my god.
Should we be laughing this much about things that snowballed out of this horrific event?
Well, was it too soon?
What are you gonna do? Laugh across.
it's definitely not too soon. It's okay. It's literally okay to laugh about.
I'm all cried out. I'm only gonna laugh.
Yeah, for real.
All right, gents. Good laugh. Good laugh.
All right,
guys. We got an email. It's thegenxlounge@gmail.com. Please like and subscribe. What is this, YouTube? Jesus. Please rate us 5 stars, please.
We could have a YouTube version.
We could. I thought about doing it for the Godzilla X-Kong review that we did last week because I do a Godzilla YouTube channel, and I was like, well, I could just throw some graphics on in the background and just play it. But maybe I will. Anyway, we're not YouTube, so give us likes. God, fucking God.
Give us a listen.
Give us a listen, and give us a 5-star rating. And tell your friends to listen to us. For God, I'm done. Goodbye. Goodbye.
Where is the beef?